know so very little about. We're taught mostly in school today how to be good technologists. We're not taught anything about building relationships with people. We're not taught about building community. Very few people get that kind of education. And it's left up to someone. Nobody really seems to know whose responsibility it is. And in the end, most people just get their education in the school of hard knocks. You know the school of hard knocks? You know, tough experience. So I want to write to her and tell her that she should really try her very best now to just be submissive, or not even, she shouldn't promote a separation or divorce. She can organize her life in such a way that she doesn't have to be burdened by association that bothers her. But Prabhupada tells a story about his sister, Bhavani, who was married to a man who turned out to be a drunkard, and who stayed out all night. I don't know what other activities he had, but she was just, she did her duties as a wife. She took shelter of the Vaishnavas for her succor. But, you know that word? Shelter? French word, succor. You ever heard that, huh? Huh? Succor. Actually, it's succor in English. It's succor. Maybe you can find it on the dictionary. Oh, I'll show you how to do it on my preview. But she did her duty as a wife. She kept his home. And her qualities were so good that at some point he realized that she was sinful, that made a fool of himself, and he actually surrendered to her from his hopeless attempt. She conquered him by her sinful qualities.
Noun or verb?
Noun. What's the origin of the word?
Forms. There are many forms. Okay. Suckers. But it is so close to perfection.
What's the origin? French? Latin? It's a French word, as far as I know. S-U-C-C-O-U-R?
S-U-C-C-O-U-R. Doesn't say it.
Okay. It is a French word.
Second,
You know it, huh? Yeah, okay. So, I'd like to see if we do our duty to act religiously, then our lives are perfect. We cannot
be too heavily influenced by the circumstances in the material world, because we can't control them. Everybody tries, but the fact is that the only thing we can really control is our own reaction to what happens. Situations like this, it's unfortunate. I mean, every time I meet someone, it seems both devotees and non-devotees, I really believe that statistic 60% of all marriages and even relationships may be higher than divorce, separation, and all of them. Why? People don't know how to relate to each other as sensitive, caring, loving, spiritual beings with a higher purpose. It's very necessary. We want to get along nicely on the relative plane. Have to have a proper understanding of your relationship on the absolute plane. And that will give you both a feeling of concern, sensitivity, and detachment also. Detachment is necessary in a relationship. Over attachment can be very sloppy, very unfulfilling. So there's a need. I really like this term of interdependent relationships. You know that? Interdependent? Huh? There's like overdependence, then independence. A reaction to overdependence is to become independent, but that's not practical. So interdependence. You build a relationship with people who are interdependent, and you work together cooperatively in whatever endeavor you're trying, knowing that neither of you is going to be, or neither of the sides are going to be dragged down by the other, whatever. It's not a sinking ship that you're getting onto. Strength. So, it's not, no, I'm going to do it because she helped us a lot. It's not my business as a sannyasi to enter so deeply into someone's life, especially a lady. But let the critics come. But so would you say you heard from me or something? Or I don't know how you would do it. Maybe it would take two letters or something. I don't know. But she's a nice girl, and I don't want to. If there's going to be something, let him initiate it. She shouldn't. Just like, you know, I spoke to one man once. His wife was very bad. She cheated. Very low class. And so I advised him that he should not sue for a divorce, but he should just remain calm and not get in the way. If she wants to walk away, that's her responsibility. Let her be irreligious. Actually, anyway, that's finally what happened. Book. Well, what shall we do? Shall we read? Shall we have kirtan? Shall we just talk?
Some of those questions. Okay.
I've got something to say also. It's not completely the sum total, but I guess I'm telling you, maybe others will learn. As you all know, well, I'll read for you. This is something I got from my doctor, a doctor, who was in Bhaktivedanta Hospital, Bombay. I feel that he was partially responsible for the encephalopathy, because they didn't really know what they were doing, and they drained me out too quickly. That's what prompted the encephalopathy, right? The liver overreacted.
That was first. And your symptoms were advanced, means that along with water, that's
the only thing. Ascites.
Ascites only thing they could do.
No, but they could have done it more slowly.
Yeah, they didn't.
I was losing
experience.
A kilo of water a day.
They didn't have experience.
Yeah. And that speed, with all those diuretics and upsetting my electrolytes.
It was okay until the last moment, because it didn't show any under symptoms during the first except when it came completely dried up.
Dear Sri Dharma, Hare Krishna, please accept my humble obeisance. All blessings to Srila Prabhupada. This is Dr. DeLaw. Salt restricted diet. I totally agree and also sympathize with your opinion. I agree that food does not just have its important nutritive components, but as Krishna says, should be pleasing to the heart. So even though salt free is ideal, taking the middle path, I would suggest nothing more than 2 to 3 grams of salt per day. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'm even taking no salt, depending on how the food tastes. Sometimes the salt, the food has its own taste. We understand cirrhosis of the liver with portal hypertension and the resulting encephalopathy be an irreversible situation. By having a protein-restricted diet, good bowel movement, diuretic therapy, etc., it may be controlled for a few years. and the symptoms, giddiness being one of them, could be minimized. But complete remission from hepatic encephalopathy and cirrhosis is not expected. So this is the standard opinion that you'll get from non-specialist allopathic doctors. I've got other information from medical journals, which I'm getting from the internet. Let's say that cirrhosis and its precursor, fibrosis. Do all of you know what cirrhosis is? It's when the liver is supposed to be a sponge. Blood is supposed to flow through it and become filtered of all the toxins, etc. It's the largest organ in the body. Performs 80 relatively major functions in the body and 150 minor ones. Big important, can't live without a liver. So when the liver tissue is attacked and killed or whatever, it's like getting a scar. When you cut yourself and it's stitched up, you have a scar there. And although you may be young, you grow up and your skin changes all over your body, but that scar remains. It doesn't go away. So that's what happens in the liver. It scars. The blood can't flow through it. And that really diminishes the efficiency of the body. It tries to go around the scar tissue by creating blood vessels, which is known as fibrosis. You get these little tiny blood vessels that go around the liver, and that starts even in the early stages of cirrhosis. So he's saying it's irreversible, but I have information that it can, now scientists believe that it can be reversed. They don't have the technology yet available to do it. They're working very quickly on it. Just like if you had consulted medical journals 30 or 40 years ago, they would probably tell you that don't have the cure for cancer just yet, but it's very soon we hope to find it. Well, our AIDS, they're even back to square one now with AIDS. I don't know where to do it because AIDS is hard to deal with. Now, the cirrhosis is fine, supposedly. Gathering in Italy. If you don't have cirrhosis, there are 50% response examples of people who put their hepatitis into remission, are gone non-detectable. It may be still in the blood, but it's so low that it's not significant. That type of treatment takes at least a year to complete. One of my brothers is doing that. The other one tried it and didn't get success, but still. By doing that kind of treatment, at the very worst, well, at the very least, let's say, the worst you can get terrible reactions to the therapy, but at the very least, it slows down the rate of progression of cirrhosis and other symptoms. I have, up to this point, not done any type of allopathic treatment simply because I have cirrhosis and just a very small percentage, maybe 15% or 10% who respond to treatment of those who have cirrhosis. Not very good odds. And I was hoping that there would be some improvement from natural medicine, but the complication is that my liver, I've not had a biopsy, which is the gold standard proof that I have cirrhosis, but I have all the clinical symptoms of cirrhosis. I'm pretty sure that I do. Now, what sends me into a coma is not my japa. I'm not deep in meditation, and I go into samadhi. It is this ammonia, which you all have ammonia in your blood, but when you get cirrhosis, it has a tendency to give you troubles with your digestion, give you troubles with your bowel movements, various things. It creates more ammonia in the stomach, which enters the blood and goes up to your brain. And you get totally disoriented. Now, my disorientation is usually Krishna conscious. In other words, I start saying all kinds of, I can't keep my thoughts together. I can be proud of that, but at a certain stage, I end up unconscious, and from there, sometimes you don't come out. So, as I said yesterday, I have reached I'm not afraid of death. It's not a problem for me. And I don't want sympathy or anything like that. Death is just a transition. I've given my life to this philosophy, and I believe it. Very strongly, I believe it. So death is not a problem. But in discussion, I mean, it would be easy for me right now to just stop taking medicine. And within a couple of months, I could probably, painfully or without pain, both situations are there, but I could just go. I know. Great attempt to think of Prabhupada's lotus feet. I don't know if I'd be successful finally, but I have to see. Anyway, I think Krishna will help me, even if I don't think of him. But I decided that I would try just basically, because I have a responsibility to all of you and to my family, my bigger family. My body is an instrument. My mind is an instrument. My intelligence is an instrument. It has been trained. And I owe my spiritual master so much that the least I can do is donate my organs to him. So, I'm not leaving at the end of the week. Originally I was going to leave on Tuesday, but decided to stay because things didn't work out in Ubrajadam. It's probably very cold there, and they don't have electricity, and it would be awkward at this time for me, given that after leaving Brazil, I was quite a bit better. But now, the last couple of weeks, my encephalopathy has been a little bit different than before. My mind is still clear, but I'm getting dizzy spells. So, I don't know when I'll be back again, or if I'll be back again. Just can't tell. I'm going to Bombay, and then I'm going to New York, and then I'm going to Brazil. Anything could happen right now. Depending on inspiration. If I don't come back, then I want all of my disciples to remain firmly fixed in Prabhupada's mission in ISKCON. Please don't get involved in any politics. Just pursue your spiritual life and be happy. And I have some of my God brothers who I love very much. And they'll give you good shelter, I hope. It's easier for me because we're not so large. You know, I know all of you personally. If I can offer you to Srila Prabhupada, then I'll be doing my duty to him. So if you become nice devotees, you don't have to be, you know, just be nice devotees. Perfect when I'm not perfect. Jaisi Raja, Vaisi Praja. But at least if you remain steady and happy, always ready to serve other Vaishnavas, and loyal to the parampara, then that will be a very nice offering to Srila Prabhupada. That's basically what I wanted to say. Sorry? Yeah, it's the first big illness. They used to call me the Iron Man. I never got sick. Hardly. I remember once I got malaria. I had 104, 105 fever, but I had work to do, so I was right on working right through it in India. It's an example to me. No matter how tough you think you are, Krishna can just deal with you. You should always understand. Totally dependent on the mercy of Lord Krishna. And should we thank him? Praise him. Questions if we can, so we can come to a clear understanding. Any question? Above? London? Oh, yeah. I thought maybe it'd be nice if she stayed with Ramanuja, his wife. Huh? She's going on the 27th. Huh? Oh, they'll agree if I ask them some questions. It depends on you. They're a really nice Indian family, nice devotees. And they live right near the airport. So if you had to get into the center of London, there's different things that could happen. Ramanuja could drive you, or you might have to take a tube. You've been to London before? Huh? Two times. So you know how to get around. Okay. I think it's a nice opportunity for a little cross-cultural exchange. Would you like to do that? Okay. We'll take care of it. you'd have to, it'd be good if you could give me all the details of your arrival, and you could do one of two things. You could go into the hotel and get settled there and then leave from there, or you could just have them pick you up from the airport.
She's staying at the hotel.
Yeah.
And then she'll just want to visit them. What? I don't know.
You can stay with them. You can stay overnight at their place. They'll cook for you delicious prasadam. Maybe take you a little tour of London. Huh? Oh yeah, they'll take you to the temple. Sure, both temples. Okay. So you want to be there, like, when do you arrive?
On Friday.
In the morning.
I love to be Friday, I'll be with the group.
Okay.
And then
okay, that's nice. So then what you could do is maybe meet them at Soho Street Temple. That's right downtown off Oxford Street. You've been there before? Okay. You could meet them there because they come there. They also go to the manor. But I'll discuss with Ramanuja and see what's best for him. Okay, we'll do it today. Janaka Maharaj and his wife, this was organized at the last minute. We had a program at their house yesterday, and we were all there, or at least the devotees who were here were there. So they're doing well. You know, I'm trying my best. The only one I could catch was Anutama. We walked into a store where he works, and he hid himself. He was hiding. Didn't want me to meet him. I can only do my best, you know. It takes two to tango. You know the tango dance?
Tango, yes.
So it takes two to tango. There has to be a spiritual master and there has to be a disciple. If he doesn't want to be a disciple, I can try. But he really on its own, I don't know what really influenced him, but he got deep in Maya. Committed some pretty heavy offenses. One was Guru Tyaga, Guru Hatya. He went to Radhakund, accepted someone else as his guru, and then doesn't follow him either. And he really made a lot of propaganda about getting initiated, second initiation. And I took a chance. It was my mistake. So, I don't know. I don't think I have to suffer for such type of persons. Do you have any questions? No? Yeah? Buddha Hari, do you have any questions? Something about Mahabharata? Okay, good. Vera? Unless it really likes very it's very, very important to ask it all. I think we're all be a little bit more open amongst each other. I know we can't trust anyone, even our God brothers and God sisters, but that's not good. Then why even become a devotee if you can't trust other devotees? Yeah.
My devotee just thinks himself in the last 2 days.
Not Hanuman.
No. I killed you. He hung himself.
I know. I committed suicide. Who was that?
Radhakanta, Parvati
Sutra. Radhakanta? Was he a mental case? Or?
No, everybody records him as a peaceful guy. Who hasn't had big problems in life, never showed them problems.
Uh-huh. Did he leave any note?
We don't know any reason.
No.
No. Little later, no.
And where was he living? At home?
With Mary Parvani.
He lived in Lika.
Yeah, I know Lika.
Yeah, and he didn't sing. But he came to the Lika to
Did he live alone?
Yes, he got a house and then he came.
Probably he had some disappointment in life. Maybe also he was his new guru. Not maybe on the day. I heard he had some relationship with some female devotee. Maybe this was also not that successful. Also, he lost maybe house in Libya because some served returned. So maybe there was a few things arranged together. So he maybe felt pointed.
Couldn't handle the stress.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about Guru. could be wrong, and there's always a question of degree. But I do believe that it is equally as important for every disciple, prospective disciple, to understand the process by which Krishna consciousness works. We are not a personality cult. Now, I don't know how much that means to you, but in America, they attracted people basically on their charisma. He was a cult leader, and he got his people to do crazy, bizarre things just on their sentiment. We are not like that. We have thousands of years old tradition in recent history. There are hundreds of millions of people who have adopted this culture, or who have been born into it and followed it. And the principle is that we need, because of our dependence on our senses, we need a deity that we can see and serve. We also need a living being, a person, right in front of us, who we can see and touch, smell and hear, I don't know about taste. I guess we can taste the Mahaprasadam. But we need someone to engage our senses. He is there's the position of guru, and there's the person who occupies the position. Now, if we sentimentally get attached to the person and neglect the position that he represents, and there's some problem, then we get in trouble. On the other hand, if we just accept the position without considering the person, it'll be kind of dry. And generally we see that all of us are inspired to go beyond our own limits by some inspirational, even charismatic person. So that person represents the position very well, like in the case of Srila Prabhupada. Then we're very fortunate and things work very nicely. But we have to understand that Krishna wants to curb down, to push down, to control or to clean our false pride and our false ego. So he tells us you cannot come to me directly. No, but I'm a very good devotee of you. I want to come to you directly. No. Ooh. But here you go. If you satisfy my representative, then I will accept you. But he's just a man. No, I will come to you through him. Okay. So that, you know, people, because my guru, this is a problem that we're going through. Who joins ISKCON? Great Paramahansa Thakurs who are just floating around looking for an organization to join? No. The people who join ISKCON are people who are tired after many lifetimes. They're tired of trying to be independent, trying to understand everything with their tiny little brain. Of people who have been bruised and broken and tortured and suffered in so many ways at the hands of material energy, material nature. They finally turn to Krishna. They look for someone who can answer their questions, satisfy their spiritual needs. Now, invariably, they don't come empty-handed. They come with a lot of baggage. By baggage, I mean all of their faults and problems, idiosyncrasies. Need a Croatian word for that. Idiosyncrasies?
I learned it in English to English.
Idiosyncrasies? Okay, unique qualities about each and every one of us, which others think, wow, it's weird. We have our own idiosyncrasies. Could be positive or negative, but we bring them all to ISKCON. So the fact that our first generation and even second generation are struggling, it's not wonderful, it's not amazing. What would be amazing is if none of us had any trouble. That would be amazing. We have the minimum standard for becoming a human being, but the fact is that we were, in our former lives, not much worse. I didn't say better, I said not much worse than animals. We were worse. Because animals don't kill their children. Black widow spiders, maybe. That'd be worse. Huh? Yeah, it kills the husband. Maybe that's not a bad idea. Given today's son, today's husbands. Y'all know this joke, I think I've heard it many times, about the lady who was the head of a procession, a funeral procession. Y'all heard that one, right? Come on. Okay, this lady was leading a funeral procession, and she had on very fancy black cloth with a black shroud, and another lady on her way to work early in the morning saw this, and she got very, very curious. Here was this lady walking on the road, and she had a big ferocious Rottweiler dog on the end of a leash who was walking behind her. She was walking along. And behind her there were about 200 women following her. Behind the 200 women there were two big black hearse, what do you call it? Car with the cast with a coffin. So this lady, her curiosity forced her. She went up to the lady who was leading the procession walking down the road, and she said, I know this may be not the best of times to ask this. You're probably feeling some distress, but what is all this? And then the lady said, lady who was leading said, well, in the first hearse, in the first car, in English they call it a hearse, a special type of car, carries a casket. In the first hearse is my husband. He died when my Rottweiler attacked him. He was fighting. And in the second hearse is my mother-in-law. She died while trying to protect her son. So then the curious lady, after hearing that, she stroked her chin and she began to think, could I borrow your dog for a day or two? And then the lady who was leaving said, get in the line. Some people have had problems. I think, for example, Rohini Sutta. It's not just black and white. He was a brahmachari. He didn't break sannyas vows. At 50 years old, if he decides, or I don't know how old he was, 49, 50, for him to decide that he needs a female partner take care of him and whatever, to share his life with him. Okay, where's he going to look? He doesn't know any non-devotee women. And there aren't many women who are at the right age and mentality in Switzerland or any of his zone. Maybe he could have done a better job, I don't know. But I don't think it's that big a deal that he married his disciple. Some people will say it sets a precedent, which is not good. And they're right. It wasn't a good thing that he did, but it's... You know, there are probably some worse things that he could have done. And then that on top of the fact that he has performed so much austerity in the form of his early years of book distribution, where he has probably done more austerity than all of us in this room combined together. I know what it's like to be a book distributor. Anybody here knows? No. Maybe at Buddhahari a little bit. But to go out 12, 14, 16 hours a day with a big, heavy book bag, and, you know, he's not a Charles Atlas or Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's a slim-bodied person to carry all those books. He ruined his health, basically. For years and years, he inspired devotees. He was number one in the world. And even as a preacher, after he couldn't do book distribution, he tried and tried and tried, even though those health was going down. He became a traveling preacher. He didn't have a small zone. He didn't say, just give me a few temples. He took a huge zone. Again, he worked hard, constantly traveling. He may not have been the best administrator in the world. He may not have been the best whatever. I don't know. But he really tried hard. He pushed himself to the limit. Okay. Vishwamitra. He fell down. Vishwamitra. We can't even compare to him. It's a joke. He's so powerful, a sage. We're not so powerful bhaktas. If we were great bhaktas, we could easily compare to Vishwamitra, like Prabhupada gives the example of Haridas Thakur. So someone will say, well, what about Haridas Thakur? But we're not on the level of Haridas Thakur. We're lucky if we can be on the level of Haridas. So if he made a mistake, I don't think it's such a major thing to shake the world, or I think you can even still, within the bounds of what the GBC decides or whatever, so that's their prerogative, they're the ultimate managing authority, you can still carry on a relationship with Rohini Sutta. He's a nice guy. He's a great person. He surrendered to Prabhupada the best way he could. So, this boy committed suicide. It's unfortunate. Maybe it's partially Rohini Sutta's fault, but maybe it's partially the fault of the society that they don't teach people what initiation is and who we are. And that you should always carry on, no matter what happens, somehow positive, carry on. more often than not, people who do this kind of thing are people who have some mental problems. May not be immediately obvious because they keep them concealed. Under stress, they come up. Diplomacy is a form of compassion. For example, sometimes I have to use diplomacy in dealing with one of my disciples who likes to drive a lot. And if I'm not a little bit diplomatic, they'll get hurt. You know, it's already probably made everybody involved in his anger. I don't know, as many people as he knows, he has a bad relationship with them. I'm looking to find one good person who has a good relationship with him. That'll give me a lot of encouragement. So we've been through a lot of but otherwise devotees, unless it's your position to be the temple president and you have to take decisions which some people may construe to be politics. In general, just execute devotional service. Try to render devotional service and be friendly to everyone. Try to serve the Vaishnavas. The other day, one boy came to me. It was funny, it was just after I'd given a class on building relationships, and I quoted Dadati Pratigranati, and giving gifts and receiving gifts is one of the six articles of developing a loving relationship. So after class he walked up to me and gave me a little gift. I think he had planned it. Before, what's his name? Bostian. Yeah, from Maribor, I think. So that was so nice, you know, perfect timing. I think he had planned it the other day, but it was just a little bar of soap, some bars of soap. But he wrapped it up. That was really nice. You know? So, be thankful. Try to be thankful that you have people who dress in saris and dhotis and kurtas with tilak on their forehead and wear ganti mala. Who chant Hare Krishna and say Hare Bol, chant Kirtan, because because they're the ones who are inspiring your faith. If you had to sit in a temple room all by yourself, just you and the deities, and you had to give a class to yourself and had to do kirtan, you'd get discouraged quite quickly. Right? Kind of nice to have other devotees around, right? It's just you and Karakamuni. Nice, but nice to be in a larger gathering of devotees too. So we're sure not going to maintain that gathering if we're nasty to each other. You should be very thankful for Krishna sent you all these different devotees. Hey, I don't know. Well, I say this, but how to say it? To a degree for me, I know a lot of people, it's 100% that if they were not in devotional service, most of the devotees are not people that they would ordinarily keep company with. Because they're devotees, therefore we're all assembled together. But if we weren't devotees, we were just some karmis doing our own thing. I don't know, quite no Gauravani. Or Gauravani certainly wouldn't know me. She'd be with her husband and her children and carrying on her life as a businesswoman or whatever. But because she's a devotee and I'm trying to be a devotee, therefore we have a relationship, she should be real thankful that you have this opportunity. It's not just that you decided that you're going to become a devotee and on the strength of your great bhakti, now you're getting help. You're getting a lot of help. That's sustaining. Your bhakti may be on this small.
I was just trying to explain how, because we don't, I was talking about the verse from Avam Parampara, the importance of following a parampara where we have knowledge to back up our sentiment, sakara, sraddha, rational faith, intelligent faith. And I was giving the example of how Lord Jesus Christ, he is our guru. We also have great faith in him. But materialistic men, they're ridiculing him because they didn't even start to write his teachings down until 50 or 100 years after he left the planet. And it wasn't that strict. I mean, a lot of people consider it that Christianity is, was it Paul or Peter? It wasn't Mary, but it was, who was the, who wrote all the letters? Was that Peter? Huh? Anybody know their Bible? Paul. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so Paul, he actually had a lot to do with influencing or filtering what we get as Christianity, the teachings of Christ, because he was a major authority in his time. There was no real strict parampara, and the original Bible went from Aramaic Greek, and then it came to other languages.
And there's a lot of difference between the English edition of the Bible and the Greek edition. You can see the words mean totally different things in the Greek Bible. So I mentioned that here's an example. Recently I got an email from someone who was ridiculing or making a joke, but it was belittling Christ's position. He said that there's a lot of evidence people don't know who Christ is. There's a lot of evidence that Christ could have been an Italian or a Jew because he stayed, he went into his father's business. Every Jew usually goes into his father's business. He stayed at home till he was 33, and he thought that his mother was a virgin, and she thought that her son was God. And a lot of Jewish mothers think like that, that their son is God. And then there's evidence that he was Italian, because he drank wine with every meal. He talked with his hands, and he used olive oil a lot. And there's evidence that he was black, because he called every man brother. And there's something else. And then the last one was he just couldn't get a fair trial. Blacks are always complaining that they don't get fair trial in America, especially. And then there's evidence that he was Irish because he never got married. Irish are famous for never getting married. More Irish bachelors than any other ethnic group. He never got married. He liked green pastures. I lay down in Gedo, I walk through the valley of death, I fear no evil, for the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. I lay down in green pastures, something like that. Something else about Irish. There's evidence that he was a Californian, because he never cut his hair. He went everywhere in sandals or barefoot, and he started a new religion. Every Californian does that. And the most compelling evidence is that Jesus was a woman, because he had to create a meal for a large number of people when there was no food around. He tried to get a message across many times to a group of men who just couldn't get it. And even when he died, he had to get up because there was more work to do. So, you know, in one sense it's funny, but in another sense it's kind of demeaning. But that's their fault, because we really don't know who Christ was. There's no really good. We don't know what he looked like, and we don't know what ethnic background really came from. There's a lot that's kind of vague and not really completely provable. So, as I expected, I said a number of times in the lecture that Lord Jesus Christ was a great preacher, but I expected somebody would be offended. And there was one person who was offended. By the joke. And so I asked the temple president, do you think anybody
but he was offended. He said, he wasn't going to tell him. Then he said, well, maybe that man over there was a little offended. Some other devotee was preaching to two of them at a table, taking Sunday feast. And he said, maybe he was a little offended by the joke. I tried to explain to him that, you know, you had spoken this to point out the problem, that the importance of parampara. So I said, all right, let me go over and apologize. And I went over and I asked him to forgive me. I didn't need to offend him. I mean, quite strong apology. And so then the next day he came back and he wanted to see me. And he said that he was so impressed that I had apologized to him that he went out and he approached someone that he knew that he thought he had offended, and he apologized to them. And he was really happy that he had done that. It made him feel very good. So, in our dealings with each other, we should always offer our obeisances. And if we even think that we've offended someone, then genuinely, not artificially, we should apologize. Maybe they'll explain something. Just like this boy who committed suicide. Who would have known? He was keeping something in his heart that he couldn't reveal to anyone. And when it became very difficult, nobody knew. And it happens like that in the material world all the time. People who, you know, all the neighbors say, oh, he was such a gentle young man. You know, he just pulled out five guns and went into, you know, a business and shot 30 people. Yeah. You know, but everybody's thinking that, oh, he's just a gentle, he's always good. He goes to see his mother every Sunday and, you know, blah, blah. Just a model. Unless people can trust you, unless they know that you won't hurt them, then they're not going to reveal. And that, that's violence. We should, if we want to reveal our heart to God, we also have to be sensitive to God's children. So, I don't think we have to. In that context, I think that here's an example. It sounds funny, but this is the way Vedic culture was. We're not in Vedic culture, but still, we put ourselves in, by our own doing, in a no culture situation. But in Vedic culture, a man and a woman would decide they wanted to have a child. So they would approach the spiritual master and ask his permission. Then they would approach a brahmana to find out the most auspicious time for conception. Then they would invite friends over, have a kirtan, tell them about the joyous event that they were going to try and conceive a child. They would ask for blessings. It was very open. It wasn't some, you know, we would say it wasn't something to be concealed. It becomes more exciting when it happens in the heat of passion. No, it's so. After that, what other problems are there? yeah, I'll be here for, I guess I'll be here for the rest of the week. And then, like I said, I can't promise. I can try. Maybe with my personal influence or Krishna's influence or something. Maybe I can be back here in August. I don't know. Can't say for sure. But otherwise, you know, it depends on my health, my travel, whatever options open. This would be a good reason to give up all faith in, well, not all faith, but some faith in astrology and Virgo. Because my chart sort of indicates that I'll have a longer, I'm not going to drop dead any time real soon. My Virgo readings also did not indicate that. One astrologer, Shyam Sundar, did indicate that. What did he say? I got another year. 2004. Huh? No.
54.
Right? I'm 52 now. Almost coming up 53. So another year or so. But I don't have a lot of faith in them. You know, sometimes you don't. What happened?
Both. Because everything is what you believe in.
Yeah.
So we should take some positive inspiration from there.
No, but not only that, there might be something that's the material world appears to be like a dream, but it is real, it's just temporary. And it's not the power of positive thinking. Think things into being. I can think as hard as I want. This couch is going to be black and green and blue. It's not going to change. This is not going to turn into, you know, what do you call those glasses that give you 3D vision? It's not going to be virtual reality glasses, no matter what I want. So, the stars are there, they have their gravity, they have influence, the ocean is moved by the moon. There is a relationship. It's a material science. It's not spiritual. It's not so esoteric that it's spiritual. It's just something that is not completely understood by our scientists. There is the army uses ESP. They study it. You know that? In Yale and Princeton, both, they have departments there that study extrasensory perception. People who have got some clairvoyancy and can see things happening in another country. So, these things do have some relevance. Shyam Sundar is a businessman. He's technically, for people who don't know astrology well, has some technical knowledge. And people probably be impressed by him, but this is what he did. I paid him $200 to do a study of the next 10 years or so. And he demanded it. And then he got up to the second year and said, well, I can see that all your Amarikas, how would you explain Amarikas?
Amarikas.
Yeah. they all come together at this time. So I think you should just ask forgiveness. Although maybe you didn't commit any offenses, but you should ask forgiveness from people and said, I forgive you for any offenses you may have committed against mention. You better read Srimad Bhagavatam and do your job well. And then he never completed the 10 years and he didn't return my money. So he doesn't know that he bought himself a walking, loud-speaking advertisement. It means that wherever I go, I tell people about the bad experience I had with Shyam Sundar. I'm going to make him pay for that $200. But there have been three relatively good. I mean, you don't find much better known to devotees, Rigu readers, who've given me much longer time, up to 75 or 80. And even astrologers. So, I don't know, what did Sanjay Roth say? Sanjay Roth. For longevity.
Better luck in the next one.
but he met a brahmachari who was, that's right, he said, Mara, don't die, you go on living, because once you die, you're going to have to accept a lot of karma. So better you live as long as possible. And then he said to the brahmachari who was performing tapasya, the better you die now and enjoy the fruits of all your austerities. And to the butcher, he said, Ma jiva ma mara, don't live, don't die. Both ways you're condemned. And to the devotee, he said, jiva va mano va, I think of open penance. You're always engaged in serving Krishna. This body of ours. So we don't have any. The biggest thing we have to fear, Ravi? What's the biggest thing we have to fear? Well, the first two words that you said were very good. The biggest thing we have to fear is fear. Fear. Yeah. As long as we follow sadhana, as long as we try, I'll read something very nice to you. Michael, why don't you read it? On GBC announcements. This was sent in by Kridayananda Maharaj. Yeah, you can read it in Serbo-Croatian.
That's your son, is it?
Huh?
That's your Serbo-Croatian.
Oh, okay.
Can I read it in English?
Yeah, read it in English.
I'm sure that you will appreciate this. This is from C.S. Lewis. Mere Christianity. You may indeed be sure that perfect justice and by perfect charity will not be attained by any merely human efforts. You must ask for God's help. Even when you have done so, it may seem to you for a long time that no help or less help than you need is being given. Never mind. After each failure, ask forgiveness, pick yourself up, try again. Very often, what God first helps us towards is not the virtue itself, but just His power of always trying again. For however important chastity, or courage, or truthfulness, or any other virtue may be, this process trains us in habits of the soul which are more important still. It cures our illusions about ourselves and teaches us to depend on God. We learn, on the one hand, that we cannot trust ourselves even in our best moments, and on the other, that we need not despair even in our worst, for our failures are forgiven. The only fatal thing is to sit down content with anything less than perfection. Also, people often misunderstand what psychology teaches about repressions. It teaches us that repressed sex is dangerous, but repressed is here a technical
term. I'll clarify that. Teaches us that?
That repressed is under the quotation mark.
Yeah.
Sex is dangerous. But repressed is here a technical term. It does not mean suppressed in the sense of denied or resisted. A repressed desire or a thought is one which has been thrust into the subconscious.
Thrown into the subconscious mind.
And usually at a very early age, and can now come before the mind only in a disguised and unrecognizable form. Repressed sexuality does not appear to the patient to be sexuality at all. When an adolescent or an adult is engaged in resisting conscious desire, it not creating a repression. On the contrary, those who are seriously attempting chastity are more conscious and soon know a great deal more about their own sexuality than anyone else. They come to know that their desires, as Wellington to Napoleon, or as Sherlock Holmes to Moriarty, or as a rat catcher knows rats, or a plumber knows about leaky pipes. Virtue, even attempted virtue, brings life. Indulgence brings both.
Yeah, so the last part of society, the habits of the soul. God first teaches us to keep trying. That is success once you achieve. You should never sit down and think that I'm perfect, I don't need to get better. But it's a fact that it's not easy, so we just have to keep trying. Anyway, like I was saying, brothers, but some people that I especially like are Gary Reisman, a friend, and he's kind of like a Siksha guru. Similar moods, preaching, and like worried. Of course, he's not like the, he's not a wide traveler. In other words, if I go, you need shelter. Suggest some people. Of course, you always choose who they like. You should always be fixed in the family business, family concern, society. There are others who are, well, Radhana Swami is very nice. But to really get the most benefit from Radhana Swami, you probably have to go and live in Bombay or Pune, because he has a lot of disciples and travels widely. You know, if you can live with that, it's a wonderful devotee. Satchinanda Maharaj is a nice devotee, although I think he's a totally quite a bit different person than I am. Vidyananda Maharaj is great. He is actually Vidyananda Maharaj is deeper than most people realize. He actually has a very compassionate heart. But
highly unlikely that he's going to be part of the process for the time being. If you're satisfied with the email letters, I don't know how great it is. That probably, I don't know. I don't, if she has so many disciples in South America. Depends on what you want, you know. If you want, you know, personal contact, personal concern, it's just Krishna's arrangement. Well, I can get real humble, but not to get well. It's just Krishna's arrangement that I don't have many disciples. And I'm quite happy with that. I can give you all time. Okay. Okay, why don't you give me a little time now?